It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A Wisconsin anthropologist and primatologist has made it her research mission for over four decades to understand and protect the northern Muriqui monkey in the Atlantic Forest of Brazil. Be part of this conversation about primate conservation. Call in with a question. Share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Karen Stryer is Vilas Research Professor of Anthropology at UW-Madison. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been studying the Muriqui for decades now. What first drew you? What first interested you about them?
I was interested in the Muriquis because back in the 1980s, there were a lot of different theories about the evolution of primate social behavior. And I was searching for a primate species that very little was known about, but might be a good test of these models that were mostly developed on primates in Africa and Asia. And I read about the Muriquis and heard about them through a film that had been produced by the World Wildlife Fund, and was able to go spend a summer just to get to know them. And the first time I saw them, I fell in love with them. So I guess that's the beginnings.
What is unique about the northern Muriquis? Can you bring us closer to them?
So what I knew about them when I first went to Brazil was that they had anatomical features that were consistent with primates that eat a lot of leaves, as well as characteristics that are consistent with primates that eat a lot of fruit. And those were the two main divisions, to simplify it, for understanding how different kinds of social organizations evolve. When I first saw the Muriquis, I could see that they were going to be a great study species because of these two alternative kinds of pathways they could have taken. And so it was just a question of trying to map on what they actually did with these bodies and teeth that they have relative to what we predicted that they would be. And what captured my interest from the first year was of intensive research was really that they're unlike any primates we had known before, most notably because of their peaceful, egalitarian societies.
Yes. What is it? Why are they considered so peaceful? What are their mannerisms like?
So Muriquis are these large, they weigh about 20 pounds. Because their bodies are like giant spider monkeys, they have long arms, long legs, prehensile tails, and males and females are the same body size and they have the same canine size. So there's no sexual dimorphism that usually in most primates gives males a physical advantage over females. In the Muriquis world, males and females are the same size. And that kind of changes the nature of their dynamics, both among males and among females, as well as between the sexes. It means that females have a lot of autonomy, and there's not a lot of benefits to males for engaging in aggressive competition to attract mates. Females have a lot of choice, and they assert it.
What are their social structures like? How do their families interact? What is that like?
So Muriquis live in what we call male-bonded societies. The males stay in their natal groups for life, the groups that they're born in. So the relatedness among males is much greater than it is among females. The females leave their natal groups when they're in adolescence and join new groups where they reproduce. And this is a phenomenon of having one or sometimes both of the sexes leaving their birth groups is something that's very common in animals as a way of avoiding inbreeding, close inbreeding, and all the potential genetic disadvantages of that. But it's also something that it means that males are related to one another. So they're kind of a brotherhood. And it also means that sons spend their entire lifetimes with their mothers, because once their mothers are start reproducing, they stay in the group that they're in, that they reproduce in for their lives. So we've got these long patrilines of relatedness with the mother still present. And then the females are independent. They leave their groups. They explore other groups when they can, when they have options. And they find a group that they like, and that's where they establish themselves as reproducing social members. So they live in these large multi-male, multi-female groups. They don't fight very often with one another. Most of their social interactions are affiliative. They hug each other and they sit close together. So, you know, males spend about 60% of their waking hours within a few meters away from other males. And that gives them opportunities to reach out and touch each other, put their hand on one another's shoulders. If anyone gets scared, they're there. They have their allies close by. And pretty much their social dynamics are peaceful, very affiliative. And when they are in situations that would in other primates might provoke conflict, either they wait patiently for their turn or they avoid one another.
Wow. Wow. Do you think you have become a more peaceful person through their spirit?
I definitely think, you know, one of the things that happens when you're observing wild primates, you know, day in and day out, is that you do really think about, you kind of get into the spirit of their pace of life. When they rest, you rest. When they get up, you get up. And so I would say that I definitely think they're good models for human behavior. I think about this a lot, especially now with what's happening with all the violence in the world, and how the Morinkees could give us all a good lesson on a peaceful society.
UW Madison anthropologist Karen Stryer studies northern Morinkee monkey conservation in Brazil, and there's space to talk. Call in with the question. You can share your perspectives, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with UW-Madison anthropologist and primatologist Karen Stryer about her life work studying the critically endangered northern Morinkee monkey of Brazil, considered one of the world's most peaceful primates. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Karen, primatologist Jane Goodall visited Wisconsin in the spring, and WPR Central Time spoke with her. Goodall explained how scientists used to think that humans were unique with their intelligence and their emotional capacity.
Science had to change its mind. And now we know that not only apes and elephants and whales are highly intelligent, but so too are pigs and rats, and so too are birds, and so too are octopuses. So, you know, the animals are very different from what people used to think.
What can you tell us about the intelligence and the emotional capacity of the northern Morinkee?
Well, we often think about intelligence, associating it with things like relative brain size to body size. But I think that we have, as we've learned more and more about primates and other animals and the complexity of their social relationships and social worlds, we understand that they have deep emotional lives. And I think everybody who has a pet at home understands this intuitively. We all know how our cats and dogs, how much they love us, and how disappointed they are when we leave them or when they see us getting ready to go, or when we don't have their favorite toys and treats. And I think that with wild animals like the morakis and other primates, we're looking at animals that live in rich, complex social worlds where they're tuned in to one another's relationships. My research team just published a paper a year or so ago that was a 20-year accumulation of all of the instances in which mothers carried their babies after their babies had died. And, you know, this was, again, something we don't know. We can't measure. We can't ask them how they feel. Are they sad? Do they notice that they're, do they know what's happening? And yet, you know, a healthy baby can cling to its mother by itself. And these mothers somehow understood that their dead infants were unable to do that because they would support themselves with their hands. It's very hard to see an animal do something like that, sometimes for days, and not attribute to them some kind of appreciation for the emotions that humans feel as well.
Help us walk in your shoes in Brazil. How do you go about studying social primates in the wild?
It's pretty much a question of waking up before they do in the morning, going to where you hope you left them the night before and hope that they're still there. This takes some practice to figure out what time of year they wake up, what time of day they wake up, and that changes across the year as the days get longer and shorter. And then staying with them, keeping up with them as much as you can for the entire day. This can mean walking up and down hills for miles and miles all day. I think in one day, my cell phone recently told me I had walked about 95 flight equivalents just in half a day. I'm not even noticing it. So it's really just staying with them and recording what they're doing. But throughout all of this, part of staying with them and trying to document their behavior is also the reality of how endangered they are. And that I work, most of my research has been conducted in a small forest fragment. So it's surrounded by pastures and farmland. And this is one of the last refuges for this entire species. There's about 12 populations of morakis, and we're really looking at the end of a line, of a lineage, unless we can help protect their habitats and make sure that the populations are protected and can grow and be well managed.
What is happening to the habitat in the Atlantic Forest?
So the Atlantic Forest was a region that was basically cut long ago. A lot of the forest, a lot of the area was deforested. It's the southeastern Brazilian Atlantic Forest. That's where all the major Brazilian cities are, like São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro and Minas Gerais, Vitória. So it was a major, major region for agricultural development and urban development and the ports to the Atlantic Ocean along this coast. And so the forest has been fragmented. What remains of the Atlantic Forest is just small pockets. Some of it is under state and federal protection in Brazil, but the larger forests often suffer from hunting pressures. And in the smaller privately owned forests, many of them have been turned into protected reserves by the owners. But even those, the forests there are protected and the animals in them are protected, but they're like islands in the middle of pasture. And unless we can find ways to reforest and build corridors that connect these different patches, then eventually the populations become basically too small and too closely inbred and don't have much of a future. So one of our biggest goals in the research right now is to learn and we've been learning a lot over the last 40 years, my team and other teams that work with us. And we've been documenting what the morakis do and what they need, what kinds of habitats they prefer, what kinds of foods they prefer, what kinds of social groups they need to live in. Even just the idea that males stay in their natal groups and females disperse, like I was mentioning earlier, give us a lot of insight into managing them. So we're right now very prioritizing connecting the main forest that I work in with another that's about 30 kilometers away that has one group of Morikis, and it's already been legally declared that there should be a corridor here. And now it's just a question of planting trees in areas that connect the little stepping stones of forest, most of them privately owned, to one another so that the Morikis can have a highway that they can take, their own pathway.
They need their own passageway. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, that's also going to protect them and other animals from the impacts of climate change, because it will give them escape routes from habitats, from local areas that get too hot or too dry, or that are severely impacted. If we can help them find ways so that they can move into more suitable areas.
Karen Stryer, in our last 30 seconds or so, does this species still surprise you? Are there new things to learn?
It's amazing. You would think that there aren't, but actually I would say every day I spend with the Morikis, every time I see them, I'm just impressed by how much more they have to teach us.
Oh, wow. So when you go out there into the forest every day, there's these little aha moments.
There are. And there's also moments about why, after 40 years, we're still worried about their conservation. I think as I get older, I'm getting impatient with with the world. It's a real story where we know what we need to do. We have the people, we have the animals, we have the forest.
And it's time to do it.
We have the ways.
Karen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Karen Stryer, Vilas Professor of Anthropology at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.